Welcome to Important Not Important. My name is Quinn Emmett.
And I'm Brian Colbert Kennedy.
But we're not sure, are we?
Yes, we are. We are sure. We're not sure if you're you because you sound like a little girl.
You know, I wouldn't say little.
Not like, little girl.
Adolescent?
Yeah, like a girl turning into a woman.
There's a lot happening in my life.
I know.
You know? No, I meant if I was that.
Oh.
This is episode 10, and our guest today is Megan Herbert. She's an Aussie world changer, screenwriter, author, and illustrator. She partnered with one of the world's leading climate scientists and science communicators on a truly awesome, wonderful, illustrated
so
book
awesome.
For kids called The Tantrum That Saved the World. Anybody will love this book, but especially kids.
And even if they don't, just, you know, hold them down and read it to them.
Right.
Because we need them to know the things that are in there, and that is that things aren't great. Okay?
Yeah, no.
And we need them to change and
everything.
Be our little change makers to use all that daydreaming and Lego building to grow up and save the whole planet.
Save what? Oh, everything. Got it. Right. Yeah, so today we talk to her and we talk about how to best model change for kids, which I think is, I don't know, feels like one of the most proactive ways to parent.
Probably.
Well, see what my kids' therapy bills say about that in 20 years. Anyway, she's great and sounds like there's more where this book came from.
Yeah, thank God.
Right.
She's going to do another book.
I know. When? I don't know.
Well.
With how many books you guys are going to order from her.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's so awesome. And like you said, it's like especially good for kids, but I just read it and I loved it.
Right. And you could read it, which is something else.
Well, it's not, it's just a normal thing that happens.
Big type.
Of course I could read.
It's big type.
And if there's photos.
Not photos or hand-drawn illustrations.
Sorry, that's what there's pictures for me to look at.
That's true.
Or when the words are hard.
Speaking of pictures you can look at, Brian is in a new relationship. And
yes,
we're really proud of him. We won't say names here.
Thank you.
She's great.
She
I haven't
great.
Met her. He won't let me meet her.
That's not true. You will meet her.
But I might not meet her if Rey from Star Wars, Brian, came to you and said, Brian, I want to be with you.
She is so fucking busy.
Who, Rey?
Rey from Star Wars.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're on the run.
Not that she doesn't need love. Everyone needs love.
No, they're on the run, clearly. But if she came to you and said, leave with me now, be with me, like what's-his-face said to her, right?
Right, right.
And he's, spoiler alert, Last Jedi, out on Apple TV now. You should see it anyways. But he says something along the lines of come with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
I can't remember what
she
it was.
Thinks about it. Brian, go.
Yeah, okay.
What do
I would,
you do?
I probably would think about it, but no. Sorry, Rey. Even though, God, I love you so much. but I'm pretty fucking happy over here, which says a lot about my lady.
Okay? Yeah,
to be competing
considering.
With Rey.
Yeah, competing with Rey. Question: Has your lady seen the action, the like life size action figure I got you of Rey? where do you keep it?
I actually think she did see it. I remember when I was prepping.
Is it because on the nightstand when she woke up?
It wasn't there when she went to sleep, but then she woke up and I had placed it there. I think she saw it before I was able to move it somewhere that was less embarrassing. But she took it well. I like laughed it off a little bit, of course, and it went over fine.
It's just a joke, but don't touch it. Leave it where it is.
Don't touch it. Don't say anything bad about it. She took it well, which was a good sign for our future.
Mm-hmm. Good tests. She's
very
passing
good
them all.
She's,
more to come here, folks. More news on that. And, you know.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. Rey, that's a good one. I could think of some others that would be tough to
But
say
she's,
no to. But
right now, with the way things are going, obviously, two right. movies in, she's the competition.
She's so wonderful. Mm. But so is my girlfriend.
Special. She is. Anyways, so listen, we're going to get to it. A quick note on merchandise. Those of you who ordered stuff from the amazing folks at Cotton Bureau, by the time this post, it should be shipped, maybe even arrived.
Yes.
The world's most comfortable shirts. Hope you love them.
Thank you for ordering.
Yeah, thank you so guys so much. If you missed out or if you want more of our gear, there's more exciting stuff to come and a fancy new online store. It's on the way.
Hey.
Just hold tight. We should be moving right along by the time this comes out. And there'll be more on that soon. So just follow us on our social feeds or check our website, our shitty website for updates.
It's not that shitty.
Now, And we'll be posting glamour shots of Brian modeling everything.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't know about that.
Yep. So check it out on Instagram if you haven't already.
Are you ready for this or what?
Yeah. Let's go talk to Megan.
Let's go.
Our guest today is Australian national hero Megan Herbert. She partnered with one of the world's most renowned climate scientists to write and illustrate an exceptionally wonderful children's book about climate change. And today we're going to explore how to grow the next generation, but literally like toddlers, from little Spitfire troublemakers into adult activists, doctors, scientists, elected officials, and more. A bunch of world changers. So Megan, welcome.
Thanks, Quinn. It's really nice to be here.
We're very happy to have you. Megan, can you give us a quick breakdown of who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm a writer and an illustrator, and I've been both of those things for the last 20 years. And I guess I've always been trying to combine those two skills into projects that like this. And this is probably my most enjoyable and successful attempt at doing that, where I've really been able to bring together all my storytelling skills, illustration skills, and interest in the environment to do something that really matters to me.
And is this actually your first children's illustrated book?
Yeah, I've illustrated many different things for other people in the past. And of course, I've been writing kids' books and putting together illustrations and trying to get them published. Right. This is the first one where all the stars have aligned with it, and it's a fully finished project. So that's been exciting for me.
Yes, it's here. We're sitting. I'm looking at it right now. I've just read it.
Oh, great.
So, Megan, we're going to set up our conversation today, something we kind of do at the beginning every time. We're big believers in questions, but questions that don't provoke action are basically just philosophy, which is great. But these times call for action, and that's where we're trying to go and what we're trying to provoke here on every level.
Which you seem to understand, as you've just gone ahead and wrote a climate Bible for toddlers, so thank you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's never too young to start, really, is it?
That's right.
Definitely not. So what we're going to do is get some context from you, why you exist, why there's such immense change facing our listeners, and then we'll progress to some specific actionable steps that our listeners can take, something that'll inspire them to get to work at whatever level, whatever party they subscribe to. Deal?
Sure. Sounds good to me.
All right, Megan. So we start with one important question to really get to the heart of why you're here today. And that kind of has multiple meanings. So instead of saying, tell us your life story, we like to ask, why are you vital to the survival of the species?
Okay, that's an interesting question. Yeah. I like to think of myself as a communicator.
Awesome.
And somebody who believes compassion is pretty much the key to all of the, solving all of the world's problems. And I'm trying to use my skills as an illustrator and a writer to communicate in a compassionate way to get people to give a shit about things that matter. That's why I like to think I'm here and what gets me out of bed in the morning and drives me to do the things I do.
I love it.
Pretty great answer.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's amazing.
Get people to give a shit. I'm into that.
Yeah, people to give a shit. You know, yeah. They should, but at the same time, you know, if we're being honest with ourselves and each other, it's like a lot of people don't. So, you know, sometimes you got to get out there and write a kid's book for all these kindergartners who just don't give a shit.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's just so many distractions in this world today, and I think people are exhausted and there's just too much information all the time. And I think people can sometimes lose sight of their compassion nerve, and we just need to reactivate it really and get people to work out how they can use that in their own lives.
I love it. I think it's great. The compression nerve. All right, Megan. Well, listen, we're going to get into this. And first thing we want to do is establish some context for our sort of topic of the day. So as you noted, you're a longtime screenwriter, you're an illustrator, and you're a mom, correct?
Correct. A mother of one.
Which is important because I imagine like you, it's an extra incentive to go like, well, how do I turn this little human into a change maker?
Exactly right. And I'm sure you experience the same thing with your kids, that every moment that you're with your child can be a teachable moment, and it doesn't have to be boring or stressful. Kids just want to know about the world. And it's a nice position to be in as a parent, that you can decide what kind of information you want to input into those little people.
Right, so, whether they like it or not.
So they're very wide open. And if you find fun ways to talk to them about issues, then they love it and lap it up.
They do. It's funny. My oldest walked into my little office here one day and looked around, and the place is just unabashedly filled with Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Back to the Future.
It's really great in here.
And Ghostbusters. And he just kind of thought for a second and goes, "We like a lot of the same stuff." And I was like, "Well, yeah, I mean, I made you like all of them. You didn't have a choice."
Yeah.
You know?
And like, that's how I programmed you.
Exactly. You're welcome. But yeah, it matters. And like you said, and I think that's kind of what we want to talk about today is, you know, I hate to say programming, but it's true. It's like those inputs, and then let them do what they want with them.
Exactly.
But, you know, the least we can do is provide for them. And it seems like what you did, at least with this book specifically, is something we really tried to advocate, which is looking at your own tools and saying, how can I help? And that seems to be the key. Everybody can do something specific to help, whether it's climate change or something else. You know, Brian rides a motorcycle.
Yeah. So...
I'm just saying, everybody's...
Invaluable actions there from Brian.
You don't know this, Megan, but Quinn loves to razz me about my motorcycle riding. Endlessly.
So your book is called The Tantrum That Saved the World. It's amazing, and it's beautiful, and it's inspiring. And you raised 27,374 euros for it on Kickstarter. Which, if I'm doing this right, is Brian, that's...
It's like $11 million US.
Right, $12 million, I think, right?
64,000 rupee, yes.
Yeah, perfect. Keep going up. So, Megan, please give us a background on how the book came to be.
Okay, well, it was a few years in the making, and it started in Iceland in 2013 at a conference called Earth 101, and... The aim of that conference was to bring together climate scientists and communicators, specifically screenwriters, but also storytellers of other formats, to communicate on the issue of climate change. I was one of the filmmaker storytellers there, and Mike Mann was one of the climate scientists. There were some really wonderful people there. And when I heard him speak and was really moved by the stuff he said, I approached him in one of the breaks and said, "Look, there's something that's been on my mind, and I'm wondering if there might be a way to communicate these issues to children so that they are the ones starting the conversations in their family and driving the change." And his eyes lit up, and he said that he'd been thinking the same thing but hadn't known who to work with or how to go about it. And I mean, he didn't know me at that stage at all, but we got to talking and we stayed in touch, and the project just grew from there. So, and it took some time because of international moves on my part, and moving back to Australia, then back over to Europe again. And he also has, as you can imagine, an incredibly hectic schedule. So there were a few breaks in the whole proceedings, but we got there in the end because we both really thought it was an important project to see through to completion and see if that idea actually had any merit to it.
Turns out it did.
I hope so.
And now your partner, Michael Mann, he directed Last of the Mohicans and Heat.
No.
Exactly. I know. He's a wonderful film director. And yes, you should all go out and watch his entire back catalogue immediately, if not sooner.
Right.
It's funny you should make that joke. My parents actually made the same mistake.
That's amazing.
And, but for real.
They Googled him and said, "Wow, he's really famous." Director. It was a cute moment.
So the correct Michael Mann, the one we're speaking of, Michael E. Mann, he is actually also involved with Heat, like his twins, director Michael Mann. Anyway, he's an award-winning American climatologist, which I think you mentioned, and geophysicist. Who pioneered techniques to find patterns in past climate change, heavily contributed to the science that won Al Gore the Nobel Peace Prize. And I genuinely do not understand how he has so many degrees.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah. So quite the record
he's
folks
done some
who
stuff.
Are not aware of of your partner's resume, which I mean, you know, when I saw the book on Kickstarter, I just couldn't have been more impressed by the combination of you two. It just seems, and the way you guys came together, I love that. It just seems so perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it was a sort of aligning of stars that worked really well, and it was nice that, you know, compared to that resume, I mean, I'm a relative newcomer and just have a huge amount of passion about this issue and wanted to do something. But it does kind of show you that any person, if they have the will to do something about this issue or any issue for that matter,
right,
you just have to do it really and try. There are so many things all of us can do. There was every reason why not to approach him, but I thought, there's nothing to be lost by doing it. So
yeah, the world's ending, might as well give it a shot. but you're so right. It's like, he's got this crazy resume, but if you walked up to him and said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we gave this to kids? Yeah. Michael, can you also write and illustrate a children's book? You'd have been like, what the hell are you talking right. about? I can't draw. And
that's right.
You know, you are such a superb artist like that, that it's again, it's like a perfect pairing. And that's where these wonderful things come to be.
That theme right. keeps coming up these past few podcast interviews we've done is how do you specifically with your specific set of talents and abilities, you know, help change the world? It makes so much sense to think about it. Like
yeah.
that.
And I think we all have to remember that each one of these people who might have a large public profile didn't always have a large public profile. And they got that way because they persisted in the thing they did. And that's relevant no matter what field you're talking about.
Right.
And it's not about gaining a profile, but if you persist, you can get your message across in whatever it is, in whatever way it is, and whatever your skills are, you can use those. So
absolutely. And you know, brainwashing 4-year-olds in a positive way is the way to do it. And I mean, look, again, we've talked about it, and it's funny, I very seldom actually talk about my children in public because I think they deserve their own life and shouldn't be dealt with stuff, and I don't put them online. But I do talk about them in this, in the respect that, you know, a lot of the reason I do this is because the world's going to be really different in 15, 20 years, which is kind of the scope that Brian and I try to aim for. We don't talk about just like crazy sci-fi that's way out there. It's what's actually affecting people now and in the next 20 years. And that's when they're going to be adults, and they're going to look at certainly... you know, our parents and then us and say, what the hell, man? And so I want to try to both cover our asses, but also educate them a little bit from the beginning. And I read them an endless number of these exact sort of version of books because they're right at that age. And we really try to fill our house with books. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this one. And both in its nature, but also how beautiful it is. You know, there's some great stuff out there. I don't know if you've seen Brad Meltzer's Ordinary People Change the World series.
I have not, but it sounds like a good one. I'll have to make a note of that for my son. I'm sure
it's dangerous. There's about maybe 10 or 12 of these things now. And I just can't stop buying them for books for people. Each one's about a specific person. It's like, I am Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, Amelia Earhart. And they're just, and they pull zero punches. And it's their life story. But, you know, it's a way to really, you know, my kids read the Martin Luther King one and they're like, wow, that was not good. And it's like, yeah, you're very lucky. And also, you know, hopefully inspires you to do something about the world. But yours is so specific, but at the same time, it's big, you know, climate change is existential.
It was a very difficult topic to approach because of that fact. And there are plenty of great books out there which address some of the individual issues of climate change, for example, a single animal and how it's endangered and why. And the more I looked into this, the more I thought, I don't want to take that approach. I would like to take the approach that all things in the universe, including plants, animals, everything else, are connected. And the things that we do have an impact on them. The things that are happening in the environment have an impact on everything else. And so I thought there's only one way to approach this. It's in a sort of allegorical tale where in effect all of the effects of climate change are landing on the doorstep of one little protagonist. And what do we do? Because really that's exactly precisely what is going to happen with our kids and is happening already. So and in terms
it's just not their problem yet. But it's going to be so soon. And on so many fronts, again, I loved it. Like as a big sci-fi nerd, the allegorical nature of it is how we've told so many of our important stories for the last 2,000 years up to now through big movies. But at the same time, there's someone in that story. It's not just the animals. You know, there's a person in there that they can identify with and say like, oh shit, I get that. I get when there's too much dumped on me. My kids talk about that all the time. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, well, sorry. Like, this is the deal.
Yeah. Time to carry the load.
Yeah. And I very specifically as well wanted to bring in the idea of tantrums. I don't know how your kids are, but my kid has never been a tantruming kid. He's actually a little talker, and we can usually talk everything through.
Amazing.
But the idea of tantrums in general, they have a bad rap. But I actually think the situation we're putting our children in is a situation where they are going to turn to us and previous generations one day and say, what the hell? Sure. And they're not going to be able to process how we let this happen.
Yeah.
And I think tantrum is the right response to that situation.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the definition of a tantrum is little children who don't have the emotions to process the thing that's happening, so they have a throwdown on the floor. And that's the point we're at now. And I think they need to be encouraged to express that and to do something about it, because they have every right to be angry and want to affect the change that has not happened and should have happened.
So. Right, especially once they discover little facts like the fact that we're constantly batting 30 years behind the emissions that are going out. So, you know, it's not like, okay, if you kids grow up and fix it, it'll just stop. It's like, no, we fucked you guys for a long time.
Yeah.
So the more we can give them tools early and try to change them into actionable little people, it feels like, I don't know, maybe they'll forgive us.
Maybe. Well, you know, if not, then, you know, find a nice quiet corner of the world to escape to and go off grid, and maybe they'll be okay. Right.
Hey, Megan, why did you use Kickstarter? We're curious.
Okay, several reasons. As we got further along with the format of the book, which, as you know, is broken into three parts. So the first part is a storybook, like a picture book format. The second part moves into more of a nonfiction science type text, where we explain the different characters. And the third part is a fold-out poster, which actually gives kids practical things they can do. Now, if you know anything about kids' books, this book does not fit into the established genres of kids' books, which makes it not really a book for mainstream publishing.
Did you ever attempt to take it mainstream?
Yeah, we were talking with a few different publishers. Of course, Mike has been published before.
Sure.
But as I realized that we really wanted this format, I started to see the conversations change, and I thought, look, we've got a choice here. We either compromise the format and move towards mainstream publishing, or we stick with this format, break a few rules, but put out the book that we want to put out. And so we chose the latter. And look, it's not the easy route. It's definitely the hard route. And I completely... you know, that there's a very good reason why publishing houses give authors and illustrators a smallish slice of the pie, because there's a hell of a lot of work to do to get a book out into the public, as I'm experiencing right now. So
what are some of the changes you would have had to make?
It would have to have been two separate books for one. There's no such thing as combining a fiction and a nonfiction book. That's just not done.
Sure.
So also most picture books these days, unfortunately, the way the industry is going, the kids book industry, almost without exception, a kids book these days needs to be 32 pages and 500 words or less. That is across the board, big name authors all the way down. People in the industry advise new writers not to even think of submitting anything else other than that format to publishers. And look, I'm afraid you just can't communicate very much in 500 words.
Right.
Not on this topic, at least. So I thought I'm going to go more for the Dr. Seuss length, which really lets you get into a story and takes a bit longer for an adult to read to their kid at bedtime, but hopefully people think it's worth it.
What was your favorite illustrated book when you were growing up?
I didn't have one, but we just had a lot of books, and as well with my son, I'm very guilty of overbuying probably. And
at least it's books you're overbuying.
Yeah, there's worse things to overbuy on.
I know. It's not a crime, I guess. But we love all different types of books. Some of the ones I've been really enjoying since my son was born. We've been buying the Usborne books. It's a great publishing house. I think they're based in the UK, and they retell a lot of classic stories in a beautiful way and use fantastic illustrators from around the world. And they've got a great way of condensing down the classics in a digestible way for a five-year-old. Mm-hmm. So,
that's cool. Yeah,
stuff like that is cool.
Awesome.
Mm. What about you, Quinn?
That's a tough one, man. Dr. Seuss was obviously a big part of my life. Illustrated stuff. Yeah. I think these, Dr. Seuss was so helpful. It's such a wide breadth of them. It's interesting. I'm going to have to go back and dig into some of those. I remember distinctly, Watch Out, the Elephant's Gonna Sneeze. One. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to have to dig back in.
Oh, I advise, have a look at All the Places You'll Go.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
That is an inspirational classic. And sometimes it's good to just read it to yourself.
Yeah, sure.
I liked Good Night Moon.
Oh, well, I mean, yes, that's like that's like the default. I a good friend of mine, and maybe one of the best birthday presents ever, gave me it's a shirt, and it looks like it's green, and it looks like Good Night Moon. But instead of Good Night Moon in the same script, it says That's No Moon, and it's a little stormtrooper looking out the window towards the Death Star.
Oh my God, incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of the perfect conflux of
yeah.
One last bit of context. The world is gonna look very different in 15 years when these kids are old enough to vote. You know, let's mm-hmm. use that as the number, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Option one is we're just a fucking smoldering rock in the dead of space, right?
Yeah.
Option two is we haven't fixed a lot, but we're not a smoldering rock in the dead of space. Megan, talk to me about what do you think the world is going to look like? You said your son's about the same age as mine in 15 mm. years. When these guys are actually, sure, there's a lot they can do from 10 to 18. And we actually interviewed a couple amazing 16-year-olds the other day who are just already done more than we have.
Episode's coming out today, right?
Yeah, it came out today. Well, this will publish in a couple weeks. Yeah. But what do you think the world's going to look like, both objectively and also things that your little person will have to and will need to contribute to?
Well, there's two answers to this question. It's the world that I fear we will have and the world that I hope we will have. So, sure.
Well,
and
that's probably meet somewhere in the middle then.
That's right. So, I mean, but well, really, the answer depends on what we do. So I fear that if we don't do enough or we don't do anything, if we're on the current trajectory, then I really am very worried for the world that our kids will live in. I think one of the biggest issues will be climate refugees. Obviously, that's a major theme in the book. I think as various parts of the world become uninhabitable or increasingly dangerous or run out of water, as we've recently seen in Cape Town and other things like that, it's not theoretical. It's happening. So I do worry that when these things happen in increasing numbers, you've got massive chunks of population who have to go somewhere. And when they go somewhere else, then resources become under pressure, and then there's the possibility of war and all sorts of things. That's the world I fear. I mean, not even to get into the climate change stuff. That's more social issues, but I think that's a possibility.
The social it's all linked, necessarily impacted. Yeah, of course. It's all linked. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, you're seeing it everywhere. Like you said, the Cape Town thing. For everyone in the West, it felt like that came out of nowhere, but Cape Town's known that was coming. Its citizens have known. You know, there's plenty of, the rest of Africa that's nowhere near Cape Town as far as being developed is incredibly parched and already dealing with massive migration issues upon whoever's just dying. We've mentioned before, they're in northern India. There are thousands of farmers that are just committing suicide because they can't grow food anymore.
Yeah, I've been reading about that issue too. It's just horrific. It's
incredible. But everywhere, you know, between the migration issues that Europe has already started to see, which are not even close to the tip of the iceberg about how it's going to happen. You know, New Orleans is, we're going to have to give up that city in the next 10 years. There's no doubt about it. New York Times just did an amazing three-piece feature on that last week. you know, Miami and New York and these places. A couple years ago, some scientists started saying, essentially, we have to start talking about adaptation because, A, we are running behind these emissions by so far. It's not 5 years. It's not 10 years. It's about 30 years. And yet these things are starting to happen. You see three hurricanes at once in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, there's already rising sea levels. I mean, these islands in the Pacific that are just gone, you know, everyone's leaving because they're not habitable anymore. You know, everywhere is starting to be touched by this, which again is just the beginning. You hope that, and again, like you, and how we try to frame everything we do is, we try to have some fun with it, but we don't want to be doomsdayers, but we also don't want to be overtly optimistic because that's not real. And we want to meet somewhere in the middle, which is, okay, if these things are already starting to happen, what can we do to help? And at the same time, again, this is kind of coming back to you is, so, okay, let's jump forward 15 years and assume some things are going to be exponentially changed. You know, what are they going to have to deal with? What are they going to look like? Hopefully, when you look at stuff like SpaceX, you know, we've already started to find a way to get off this rock, or at least get off this rock a lot cheaper.
Yeah. See, I'm a huge Elon Musk fan, but I don't think the first solution should be to walk away from this mess and jump off the rock. I know that's not what you're saying either, but I know that there are a lot of resources being spent on that. And I think this is the hopeful side of the coin that I try to focus on the most, especially when I'm trying to make a difference, is that you look around and all the technology that we need is there. It's not like a mythical thing. Also, there are so many people trying to work on this issue. So I think that if enough things come together, we've got the technology. What we need is lawmakers and business and consumers to change their ways. And that is really the biggest roadblock. Because you can have a million and one people having a compost in their backyard. If the big business and government are not doing what they need to be doing, I'm afraid it's going to count for naught. So that's where it's frustrating. And that's where in our action plan, it very clearly says, you know, one thing is the things you can do, but also you have to reach out to the people who are making the laws.
Yep.
And because it's got to be an effort on the behalf of everybody, but particularly them.
Right. And that's a big thing in kind of how we try to close these is what can you do personally and what can you do reaching out to these people? And like you said, and in the companies you buy from. And what's interesting is, you know, the lawmakers are really, especially here, the lawmakers are the ones running so far behind now, because in the past 3-4 years, because of how cheap clean energy has become in so many places, businesses have started to embrace it so much because the one thing that drives them, no matter what they say, is their bottom line. And when it becomes more reliable and cheaper to run your business on clean energy, they're just going to do it.
Yeah, why wouldn't?
And a lot of them have started to do that. And so you hope that they can start leading the way. And then you look and hopefully it just seems at some point, especially once we get really anybody else as president here, like a rock or an other inanimate object, that they'll go, oh, we're behind the eight ball here for the first time. You know, like we need incentives and things like that. But, you know, with how things have turned over in LEDs and how things have turned over and are turning over so quickly in cars. I mean, you know, even Volkswagen, which what a nightmare the last 5 years has been for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, have said, and we'll see how much they hold to it. They're putting out starting next year, they're going to put out a new electrical vehicle every month, essentially. Mm. You know, and again, because it's becoming cheaper and because you've got, you know, gasoline standards and things like that, that again, are just bad for business. So that means you've got to convert in some way. So hopefully those things start to really lead the way and do make a difference in the next 10, 15 years. So government has to get on board.
Well, I think another thing it's worth noting is that we are actually at a point where choices and changes becoming more profitable or cheaper for people to choose should not be our driving choice anymore. And for example, printing this book in the way I did was not the cheapest option.
Tell everybody about that.
Yeah, we were reading about that on the site.
It's a carbon neutral production in that the printing house I'm using is not based in China and it's not doing all the cost-cutting methods that most major publishing houses do. It's printed in the UK in a fantastic facility that is run on renewables. They dispose of their waste responsibly. The book is 100% recyclable, including the non-plastic coating on the book. I really wanted this book to be a physical representation of the
ideas of everything you're talking about.
And let me tell you, I hope that it actually inspires people to do this so that the prices do come down. But there are things we have to do now that they're not going to be cheaper right now. But it's like, for example, supporting the organic industry. It's not cheaper right now, and it probably won't be cheaper for a while. But if we don't support it, it'll disappear. We are at a stage where we've left it so late that we've got to just swallow the cost a little bit, at least in this early stage, until that ball gets rolling. So I think it's great for people to remember that it doesn't always have to be, you don't have to wait for the prices to come down.
No, not at all. It's just nice that there are some pieces of the momentum that are that are finally going our way, that are going like, oh, that's not going to turn around again.
It's because they make sense. This is the crazy thing. It's just, you look at all these solutions. They make people healthier, happier. It's free or cheap to do a lot of these things. It makes sense in that it works with systems thinking. So everything about it makes sense. And I'm staggered that people can't see that.
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah. I was talking to my wife the other day about there's three things that really stick out to me that have sort of, in their own sort of powered the 20th century. And we're all so necessary and we're so lucky to have. Inevitably, we'll look back and go like, wow, that was our best option. And, you know, the first is, before penicillin, the best way to stop infection was to cut someone's leg off. And, to their credit, that really was the best way. You literally, cut it out and you make sure it can't spread. They had no other option. And that is the fundamental difference between World War I and World War II. And
where were the leeches? I forget. There was a lot of leech use.
I mean, some people still use them. But
and I believe maybe a few maggots. Was also a thing for a while.
Right.
Nice.
But you can't fault them for it. And the second one is chemotherapy, which is so incredibly brutal on the body. Sometimes even worse than the cancer itself, whatever form. Mm. It destroys you. I mean, it's literally destroying cells. But in many cases, still, and has been for the past 30 years, the best option we have, which is the bluntest instrument. But now with the rise of targeted immunotherapies and DNA sequencing and things like that, which is still extremely early days, again, in 15 years, with how much has changed in the past four, you feel like our children are going to look back. And I'm not sure the cancer is ever going to be cured, because it's actually thousands and millions of different strains in the way it develops. But in 15 years, we'll look back and go, wow, thank God for chemotherapy, but holy shit, remember that that's what we used to do to people?
Yeah.
And I feel like gasoline is the third one of those, which is, we don't, and oil, I guess, the gasoline being the derivative there, we wouldn't have any of this without that. But at some point, you think we're going to look back and go, wait, we got this fucking sun in the sky the whole time.
Whole time. Never going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Wind's always blowing. Ocean's always churning. And we used this finite resource that was priced out of control and controlled by about 12 countries.
And was making everything in the whole planet sick.
And also gave everybody cancer and planet sick and ruined a bunch of animals. So I'm glad we found it. But at the same time, because you know what? Until 10 years ago, solar panels didn't work. They were horribly inefficient. They still are. You harvest about 20% of the energy out of them. So look, we couldn't use them. But at the same time, they were these building blocks that, oh boy, I'm looking forward to being done with them. And again, I hope in 15 years our kids can look back and say, like, A, I'm a robot. B, so glad we have targeted immunotherapy and free energy stuff like that. So anyways, all right. So that's all the context of how we all feel like the world might and hopefully and probably will look like. So let's focus on our topic, which is, how do we prepare this next generation, which is actually with how old we are probably the generation after that, again, babies, for change and action? Megan, what sort of unfair expectations are we putting on them? You know, what do you feel like? And again, let's be specific here. What are realistic in a world where there's a million things? What are they realistically going to need to change, cure, solve that we won't have fixed yet?
I'm not sure. I don't know, because all of my ideas about the next 15 years are based on what we can do now and how we can bring them along with us, because we are currently in the position of being in charge of these little people, and we're not going to be entering. We're not going to be entering into a void for the next 15 years.
Sure.
So really, I think if we work with them by explaining what we've done and showing how we're taking ownership of it and trying to fix it, that they will then carry that baton on. And I think that will be a very natural thing. And in fact, it has to be working all together in that way.
Well, and I think that's such a big part of parenting too, right? Which is, of course, like your kids should see you go to work.
Also just living by the things you tell them to do, not the right. Do what I say, not what I do attitude. It's, you've got to lead by example.
Right.
You wouldn't know any leader who can actually lead people effectively who isn't leading by his or her example.
Let's not get fucking started on that right now. Interesting.
That's true, but there's no effective leadership going on there at the moment, is there? So we know that doesn't work.
Entirely different conversation, Megan. A lot of drinks involved.
Let's not go there, please.
But you're right. See, you know,
it's drink o'clock where I am. It's too
it's
early
only
for
two
you,
here, so. Okay, in the afternoon.
Megan, for 15 months, it's been drink o'clock here all day, every day.
That's a very good point.
You know, but you're right. We might not be working on the same projects, and hopefully we aren't. And yet, at the same time, there's things that we will be still working on. Like you said, to model that the best way we can. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about this a little bit, which is, and this is coming back to using the tools that you have, right? My kids ask so many questions, which is wonderful and at the same time exhausting. But at some point before 15 years from now, because of their access to information and all their questions and how the world's going to change, they're going to look at me and say, what did you do? My answer is a newsletter and a podcast right now. But this is the tools I have to use right now. And to me, it feels more than most folks, but I'm hoping to use it to implore more folks to do things like you're doing, or to start their own news organization, or to plant trees, or whatever the thing is. And to me, again, I want to model that as much as possible so I can say I did something and now you do something, even if it's something different. And also, I'm very sorry.
Well, just to go back to Mike's impressive CV, I think one of the reasons why he is so well known is he is not just for being a scientist, but he is a science communicator. And yes. I don't think you should underestimate the power we have in today's age, where we can reach as many people as we like if we do it in a really clever, effective way, to change attitudes and change the conversation and make people do things. I mean, you only have to look at the Parkland kids and what they've achieved in a short period of time with nothing more than the internet as their tool and some very, very strong voices.
Yep.
And it's passion driven by their beliefs and their experiences. So you can't beat that, actually. And I think anyone who has got the power to sit behind a keyboard or get together a group of people in their community or whatever it is, it's actually a massive, massive power. Yeah, because it's the way we can make change happen now.
Yeah, and I brought this up before, and I think maybe in the podcast that came out today, you know, there's this picture that went around online last week of the first day the kids returned to school. And it was, if you look at the front of the picture, it's basically 15 gold, like emotional support golden retrievers waiting to like, make these kids feel better. It's amazing. But if you look closely in the background, plastered on the front of that school is the Gandhi quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world." And it just makes you feel like, boy, these guys fucked with the wrong school. Like, this is written every day. They might not have, these kids, they're high schoolers.
Yeah.
Whatever. I get it.
Yeah.
But they see this every day and they've seen it their whole life. And now it's like, oh, of course they're turning this shit around and doing something about it, you know?
And I mean, another thing to take from watching what they're going through is I read a piece that Emma Gonzalez wrote for Harper's or something, in which she reminded the world that they're just kids and they would also like to go back to being kids after this is over. And this is something that really speaks to me, because we are putting this enormous responsibility and these horrific situations on our children because of our dumb choices.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout the last, I don't know, 10 to however many generations, we have to also help them and also let them go back to being kids. I mean, they can't shoulder this whole thing by themselves. They can't fix, as 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds, they're not going to be able to fix this stuff. But at least we can show them by making it a family-wide conversation all the time, and it's something you do all the time because it's the new reality, that's what you are living. That's your reality, and that's what you believe, and how you want to help them through it is by acting on it with them all the time.
Sure.
You mentioned, Megan, the, what was it, the Usborne Publishing?
Yeah.
And then, are there any other books like those or like yours or on any other tools that you think we can provide for our little guys?
Yeah. So, I mean, your website's World Saving Books, and that's plural.
Correct.
What else we got going on here, Megan?
Well, the other ones aren't published yet, but they're ticking away in my mind, in my mind palace.
I was going to say, you've got nothing else going on?
No, there's a lot going on. I'm actually working on the early stages of a book about systems thinking for kids. So, and I mean, for those who don't know much about systems thinking, within nature, everything within nature conforms to the ideas of system thinking. There's no unnecessary byproduct at all. So, you know, a monkey eats a berry and he runs across the forest and shits it into the woods and that grows into a tree. You know, it's, the whole thing is connected. What I'm hoping is that the next generations of designers, that it becomes an utterly essential part of their toolbox, that they wouldn't even conceive of designing a thing without making it conform to systems thinking. Yeah, I mean, disposability and convenience is the scourge of this planet. And so I mean, there are many topics that I want to talk about that sort of cover this, the things that we're dealing with in this incredibly complex world. And I think kids are so smart, and they're seeing it all, they're living it all. So we've got to give them tools to do it. So there is only one World Saving Book right now, but there will be more. So.
That's what I'm talking about. And you know that you can raise millions and millions of dollars on Kickstarter. So
right, just let Brian do the conversions for you.
Yeah, you know, just wait till I'm out of therapy from the first one, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure,
right. Of course.
You know, one of the things I read about years ago, and one day I'm going to find this link because it explains it in such a more eloquent fashion than I will be able to, is this discussion about modifying college/university. Concentrations or majors in the United States from something non-tangential like mine was religious studies, which was wonderful, to something proactive and practical that still requires clearly like a technical know-how, but that isn't everything. You know, huge goals and projects that require thinkers in the humanities to ask like, what if or should we do this? Because a lot of technical folks rightfully aren't trained in that. Their minds in other places, you know? And that could be goals like literally just like drinking water, because it affects everything, you know, local government to marine biology, you know, osmosis, all of these things coming together to anthropology. Again, second world building, which I agree with you. That shouldn't be our focus, but I love that it is happening simultaneously. So should we actually not die in a ball of hellish fire? You know, we've got something going on already that isn't ditching this place, but is building ourselves out because we are growing and changing. It could be something, again, literally just as basic as reducing emissions, which comes with in so many places. Again, it's so much sociology and anthropology when you're acting on a personal level, to corporate infrastructure. You know, you need business people. You need the technology. You need people who are working on carbon capture. You need people who are working on geothermal stuff. So that's something that's really interesting to me. Whatever happens to the university system in 20 years, which might not fucking exist anymore, that's, again, there's the things we can do with them now, which is writing, and for us, our job helping to promote a book like yours to what are the things we can sort of build for them ahead of time and change things so that it's a better system, for a more useful system for them to learn and apply themselves.
Well, I mean, I'm a big believer in some of the things that kids really should become very, very good at. First of all, sort of resilience and determination and sticking to a thing, because the way that communication is these days, it's designed to disrupt your attention. So getting them to focus on things, but also getting them to do teamwork, build ideas together, collaborate. And you've mentioned Star Wars a couple of times, but now I'm going to be Star Trek.
More than a couple.
I know, I'm sorry.
Oh, by the way, I'm equal opportunity.
okay,
so
good.
Bring it.
That's good. So the concept behind that wonderful film, First Contact, is something that I think of all the time, because it discusses the idea that's central to Star Trek, where there is a certain day when all of humanity switches its focus from personal gain and capitalism over to getting to the stars. And you know, the whole infrastructure collapses in terms of people earning money just to better themselves. All people's efforts go into this one central idea. And I love that idea. And I actually think something of that nature is going to be essential. We're going to have to start to collaborate in ways that aren't necessarily going to a day job from 9 to 5 and getting a neat little paycheck. People are going to have to just do this stuff. And they are already. I mean, you see people doing their own initiatives all the time, and it's not on the pay structure at all. But I think this has to be a much broader approach that will be probably the reality of our kids. And you talk about universities perhaps not existing or existing in a very different format. I think that's absolutely realistic. And I think increasingly learning will be online and distant, and you'll be collaborating with people all around the world, and it will be problem solving. And that idea really excites me. So, yeah.
I hope that happens before some huge catastrophic event, you know? I'm always so fearful that it will take something.
Yeah, well, that's what we all hope. And it's hard to go on when you think of those potentials, but at the same time, it's a bit of a race, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. We talk about that a lot. It's a race against time. Like, if we make it through this thing, and we will in some way, I mean, look, there's a version we don't. We will in some way. It just could be really, it could really suck for our kids' kids. Mm. We can. There's so much incredible shit happening simultaneously. Again, the medical versions of SpaceX with immunotherapy and nanobots and stuff like that. Not even all technology, just the connectedness and what people are able to do and what we're doing with disease and clean energy, and how cities will completely change once cars become electric and autonomous, you know, and what we're able to do now with vertical farming and shit. You're in the Netherlands. What you guys are doing with the greenhouses is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my life.
That is wild.
Yeah. And I mean, as well, the Dutch are very good at building environments that are livable for humans. And it is one of the greatest joys to be able to do everything in your life on a bike and not own a car. And I'm from Australia and you cannot do that in Australia for several reasons. The distances are too great. The roads are not set up that way. And motorists are quite keen to knock as many cyclists off the road as they can.
You're talking about Los Angeles.
Yeah, but to be here and to see some of those things, it reminds you that it's so possible. You just actually need the governments to set the infrastructure up. And yes, it costs money for the first little while, but then it's there and people can live it.
And that's a great segue.
What should we do as parents and, you know, current vote-holding citizens be saying or demanding of our elected officials, in the meantime?
Well, you guys and me, we're coming from two different places in that voting is compulsory in Australia. So we are always very engaged with politics from a young age. And I would hope what's happening in your country right now is making a lot of young people angry and makes them enroll to vote and actually continue to be engaged, not just for the term of this particular presidency, but beyond that. And in fact, I'm always staggered that voting isn't compulsory in every democracy, because
it's the whole point of democracy.
It's madness. So look, just number one is voting, is being engaged, is paying attention. And number two, I think there is a huge amount of strength and effects you can have if you operate on a community level. You see all these fantastic small grassroots organizations, you know, Mothers for Clean Air and all these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I think they make a massive difference because they can turn up to town halls and whatever else and speak on a personal level. And we've got to remember, storytelling is our biggest strength and our biggest secret weapon.
Yeah.
If you take the personal into those spaces, people listen, or they can relate to you. They picture their own grandkids and all the other things. We're a race that wants to hear stories and wants to have our hearts won over. And you know, why else do we sort of go to the movies and all the rest of it? I mean, that's the way we communicate with each other, and it always has been since the campfire days. So, I think those two things, voting and staying engaged, and then actually just going into your community and speaking to the specific issues in your community, I think that is the easiest thing people can do, and it has a huge effect.
Well, it's the easiest efficiency-wise, use of your time. It's easiest practically, the place where you're most likely to make change,
right?
Because it's on a much smaller scope. unless you live in New York or London or somewhere where it's just it's so much harder. And it's easiest because theoretically either you know the issues or you can become more aware of them and familiarize yourself with them more easily, because when someone talks about a specific area or thing, you've probably interacted with it in some way, or you could very easily. And I think actually we've seen a lot of that, which is great here. How it turns out, we'll see. But, you know, in some ways, this administration has been one of the best things to happen to the progressive side of America in a while, because if this election had gone the other way, none of these groups would have sprung up. You know, there wouldn't be marches. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be all these get out the vote groups or registration groups or things like that. And it was just necessary. And it gets people excited and they feel involved and people are doing more than they've ever done. So, you know, we always talk about this. What are the things people can do? And to me, I just want to think about, okay, both things to work on right now, but also on those local levels, talking with school boards and such like that. What are the ways, again, we can set our kids up for success? And again, it's different all over the world, obviously, and it's different for every school system or private school versus public. But again, how do we set those things up so kids, you know, don't get to 10 and 12 and be like, yeah, well, the schools are shit and don't support me. So I've still got all these obstacles ahead of me. It's, you know, what else can we do to make up for what we've done, essentially?
Yeah. And I mean, that's where you're right. It is different in every country, in every town in the world. And that's why you've just got to go to the things happening around you. They're the things that you know about, you understand, and perhaps things you have solutions for. So that actually is a big change. When you make small changes in your immediate environment, it does add up. And starting from the home and then spreading out to maybe the local school and maybe something in your workplace and then a bit broader. And I think also there's a momentum with that, and people realize that they're empowered. They realize they can affect change, and you see people going further and further with these efforts.
And you know, I think it's just a realize, you know, thinking about what you're saying too, is by modeling that on a local level, that is actually, and my kids love watching Blue Planet and Planet Earth and this stuff. It's incredible. And in some ways is the best way for them to get exposed to this stuff. We didn't have this kind of stuff. We did Encyclopedia Britannica, but at the same time,
slightly less entertaining.
It was awesome. I've still got mine. but those are great, right? On a bigger, broader level. But if you can affect something on the local level, save some small species or habitat, or improve the water quality, or, you know, the air quality, or get rid of a polluter that you guys drive by every day from some campaign or petition, that is actually something your children can see a change happen. And you feel like, shit, that is might be the one thing that sticks with them, is a memory they have of actual change happening.
I think people can go even smaller than that, though, because I'll give you an example of something that happened just this week in my life with my son. So we went to the supermarket and the two of us were chatting away as we're getting the couple of things we needed. And a lovely lady popped out from behind the deli counter and proffered a plastic cup with a straw in the top, covered in sort of Disney marketing, whatever it was, and said, here you go. This is for you. It's just a little gift. And my son's eyes lit up and I thought, okay, here's one of those moments where I have to make a decision how to handle this. Uh-huh. And he knows that we've been trying to reduce and get rid of all the plastic in our household. But I thought, okay, I can't actually break his little heart, but I've got to just handle it. So we talked about it and I said, oh, that's so kind of you. However, we've got quite a few cups at home and somebody else who doesn't have a cup might need this more. And he looked at me as though, whoa, what's going on here? And that thankfully that the deli lady said, could totally get what I was doing. And she said, oh, I've had a great idea. And she disappeared behind the counter and came back with a slice of cheese and said, how about I'll give that cup to somebody who needs it and I'll give you this bit of cheese. And he was thrilled with that. He didn't care about the cup.
Cheese
and
is that amazing.
Cheese is great. So it was one of those moments where you can actually, every single moment with your kids is an opportunity to show that you're making those little changes, whether it's trying to reduce the amount of disposables in your life or whether it's trying to get rid of all landfill garbage and you can sort of build towards that together, or any little thing, or riding your bike together to school. And I think that you can start as small as that And whenever I'm doing anything good or bad, I always say to myself, imagine 7 billion people just did that.
And That's a really good one.
Because if, say, for example, I was at the airport the other day and I wanted a coffee before the flight, I thought, okay, I'll go over to that Starbucks thinking I could sit in and have a coffee. Right. However, I discovered to my horror that even people sitting in were given coffee in a disposable cup. And I thought, okay, this is a moment where I either say, oh, but I really want a coffee and I'm going to sit down anyway, or I keep walking and say, I don't need that coffee that badly. It actually matters. If 7 billion cups, if 7 billion people said, I'm going to sit down and have that coffee,
sure,
that makes a big difference.
Right. And so, right now the Pacific Ocean is like, P.S., that's what's been fucking happening, right, by the way.
That's it. So you actually have a choice in every moment, whether you're going to live by those ideas or not. And imagine the 7 billion people equation, and you will be it's very clear what you need to do each time. It really is.
Oh, man, I'm not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah. No, it's true. Again, my son calls every car besides electric cars pollution cars.
God, I love that.
And when I told him what paper was made out of, he was like, oh, okay, I'm just not using paper anymore.
Yes, that's it for paper and me.
You know, he has become so black and white about it all. We have an electric car, and he and I got bumped and it's in the shop and we had to get a rental car, and he walked up and you heard him like audibly sigh and he goes, huh, you rented a pollution car. And I was like, all right, listen, do you want to get to school? Cause we can't fucking bike there. It's Los Angeles. I get it. I'm working on it.
That's so good.
Give me a minute.
That speaks volumes to you as a parent.
But that's great. That is so great that he has got those very strong compass, moral compasses in him already. And that
disappointment
that you're doing. Yeah, of course. Well, you know, there's got to be some casualties to this situation. Mm-hmm. So, but it's good that he understands that you've got to stick by the thing you believe in. So that's great. You're doing something right, Quinn. Trying to be too hard on yourself.
I'll tell you what, I can't stop thinking about the imagine 7 billion people just did that.
Yep.
You might be illustrating a t-shirt for us to cross sell here real soon.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'll have my people call your people.
Yeah. It's such like a front footed, like aggressive way of like marketing people. But at the same time, Brian and I have kind of embraced ethos of like, yeah, well, the world's burning. Time to do it. So that's the way it goes.
It is. It's time to get serious.
Yeah, no more soft messaging. You know, maybe for toddlers, but for everybody else, like, oh, really? Well, imagine if 7 billion other people did that. Go fuck yourself.
Exactly.
Good.
We're getting close to time here. This has been incredible. We can't thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you. We have.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. Who else should we talk to, Megan?
Who else has inspired you over the past year or so, or you feel is doing this right? And it can be anyone from elected official to business to.
People have said their parents. It can be anyone.
Yeah, I can't name specific names right now because it is getting on to 10 past 10 over here and I'm a fairly tired mother of one. But I can tell you that the people who inspire me most are the people who are perhaps just a lecturer at a university or mothers acting in small groups in their community. I keep seeing these evidence of people doing small, very impactful things all the time. And it's not the big ticket people necessarily.
Sure.
I get so much fuel from that. When you see it, you think, oh, thank God, it's not just me. And yes, there are people and gosh, they're putting aside their own sort of conveniences to actually make a difference. So it's not about the big famous ones for me. It's definitely about the small community change makers. And I'm inspired every day I jump onto Twitter or Facebook. Something pops up and you think, okay, we're on the right track.
You are on a different Twitter or Facebook than we are.
Which one are you using?
You've got to adjust your feedback loop.
I know. All right. So listen, let's, you're crashing on us and Brian has to go to sleep soon too. Let's summarize what our listeners and progressive folks can do to take action. One is teaching, and again, this is specific today about children, about this younger group. You know, we get to, for the most part, start from scratch, and we don't want to dump the world's problems on them yet, but we want to ease them into it while letting them be kids and use the dreaming that they do every day to hopefully also apply to something that'll help humanity. And that's teaching them how to learn, how to be resilient, which I couldn't agree with more. to stick with one thing at a time, to stick through something, and to become communicators in a way. Number two is to model behavior, both on a very personal level, but also, like you said, just fucking vote, man. Take your kids when you go vote, even for the local stuff, especially for the local stuff, because
absolutely
this could be somebody who lives down the street from you, not somebody that you see once a year. You know, to be engaged, to make change, and like you said at the very beginning, to be compassionate. You know, model that as much as possible for the earth, for other humans who also have to breathe this air. I think those are kind of the main, most specific points. Am I missing anything?
I think just it's easy for people to break it down to two things. It's the things that we have the power to do ourselves and the things we have to prod big business and leaders to do.
Right.
And the things we can do for ourselves can start so, so small. But if you actually stick to them and show your kids you're serious with each little action and then multiply it by 7 billion, we're getting somewhere.
You know, and I just thought about your last thing, which of course makes sense. I mean, we're both writers here, but like you said, we have been storytelling since fire.
Mm.
We didn't have written anything forever. Nobody did. And you, going back to that, and in some ways it seems like cheating, but using personal stories to advance change, it just fucking works.
Anybody can cheating do it. At all. It's absolutely not cheating. We need to hear the personal, and it's only, I mean, you hear people say, oh, I couldn't relate to that until my sister, brother, daughter, son, whatever, went through it. Now I get it.
Yeah.
And that's just the way we are. We don't care if it doesn't touch us. And that was why in the book I wanted Sophia to be compassionate, so she had to understand how her friends felt. And
she had to go on a journey to get there.
Yeah, that's it.
And I think kids can empathize with it because she doesn't at the beginning, and kids don't. No. And that's the way it goes.
No.
All right. So we're getting towards the end here.
We got a last, just a few more questions for you very quickly. Yeah.
It's sort of a lightning round. Yeah. It's a lightning round. They'll stay awake.
Okay. I'll do my best.
Okay. When was the first time in your life when you realized you had the power of change or the power to do something meaningful?
Gosh, probably I made the biggest changes when I was a soap opera storyteller, because you would get feedback from viewers and realize that you had actually touched their emotions and you'd never met them. That was a very big moment.
That's really cool.
Feel great. All right. Question number two. How do you consume the news, Megan?
How do I consume the news? As little as possible. No,
good. That's good. Not true.
And number three, and this will be a good different perspective on it. If you could, do you know what Amazon is? Amazon, do you guys have Amazon?
I'm quite aware of Amazon, yes.
Well, you know, they're not someplace. It's easy. Okay.
Yeah.
I
don't
know
if you guys have Amazon Prime. America's become addicted to this problem. Which is you get this 2-day free delivery, anything. You can get a toothbrush or a fucking bathtub or anything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could Amazon Prime one book to Donald Trump, what would it be?
My book? Are you kidding?
I literally just looked down at your book. I was like, she's going to say Tantrum to Save the World.
Perfectly aimed to his age. I think the pictures would help him understand a few things. And there's a fun fold-out poster. That would distract him for at least 5 minutes.
He does love posters. It's true.
He does.
Yowza.
That's amazing.
What do you do for fun, Megan? Any hobbies, non-work?
I often take myself off to the gallery and draw the masters, and I love doing that.
Whoa. Oh, cool.
And living in Amsterdam, the amazing galleries are everywhere, so I do it as often as I can.
That is such a great city. I love it very much.
It's good.
It really is.
Last one.
Where can we find you online? Where can all of our listeners follow you?
Okay, well, I'm on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, both as myself, Megan Herbert, and various world-saving books handles. So if you do a basic search, I'll pop up somewhere along the way. And trying to be as regular as I can out there online.
It's a hard one. And to everyone, just to reiterate, if you're a parent, a teacher, a librarian, a grandparent, people who might have kids someday, Brian, people who accidentally already made kids, Brian,
people
who are like 16 and desperately trying not to have kids. You can all buy the book right now at worldsavingbooks.com. Is that right, Megan?
That's correct. That's correct. We'll ship it directly to you.
And every time she gets an order, she winces a little bit, but it's good. everybody's doing a good thing here. It's just, you know, more masking tape.
That's right. That's right.
It really is wonderful, too. I really love your book.
It's awesome. When I gave it to my kids' preschool teachers, they were like, cool, we're going to have a protest. And I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing, man.
That's what I want to hear.
Such hippies, dude. I love it. I'm awesome.
3 foot tall protesters are my favorites.
Yeah, right? You're just kind of like, what are they doing? Megan, thank you so much
for
your time today, for this book, for the books to come, for all that you do and have done, and the way you're raising that little human of yours. Please keep kicking ass out there. We are very much depending on you. These little creatures are depending on you.
I'll do my best. And I know you guys are doing your best too, which is also very heartening. So thank you for what you do.
It's all relative. But We're working on it. Megan, thank you. Go to bed. Hopefully we'll have some orders in your inbox. Not when you wake up, because it'll be a couple weeks before it publishes. You get the point.
I get it. Thanks. And great to talk to you guys. Thanks for the chance to have a chat.
Yeah,
yes, it was wonderful.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Good night to you.
Thank you.
See you. Bye.
Thanks to our incredible guest today. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope this episode has made your commute or awesome workout or dishwashing or fucking dog walking late at night that much more pleasant. As a reminder, please subscribe to our free email newsletter at importantnotimportant.com. It is all the news most vital to our survival as a species.
And you can follow us all over the internet. You can find us on Twitter at importantnotimp.
Just
so weird. Also on Facebook and Instagram at Important Not Important, Pinterest and Tumblr, the same thing. So check us out, follow us, share us, like us, you know the deal. And please subscribe to our show wherever you listen to things like this. And if you're really fucking awesome, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Keep the lights on. Thanks.
Please.
And you can find the show notes from today right in your little podcast player and at our website, importantnotimportant.com.
Thanks to the very awesome Tim Blaine for our jammin' music, to all of you for listening, and finally, most importantly, to our moms for making us. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.